Hola, hola, ¿cómo están? Bienvenidos a un nuevo episodio de Nos Ponemos las Pilas. Muy agradecido que crean que este espacio les va a llegar a entretener una parte de su día y espero que lo disfruten mucho. Hoy en inglés con Rowdy Gaines, una de las figuras que yo entrando a conocer lo que significaba el movimiento olímpico y los Juegos Olímpicos arranqué idolatrando. Medalla de oro en los 100 metros libres de los Juegos Olímpicos de Los Ángeles 1984, a donde ganaría dos medallas más en relevos y posteriormente analista durante ya 7 Juegos Olímpicos, entrando a su 8º juego en la natación de cada una de esas grandes citas. Es la voz de la natación en el mundo. Y hoy nos dio un par de minutos de su día para contarnos su historia y hablar un poco de la natación y lo que se espera de estos Juegos en Tokio. Así que a disfrutarlo. De aquí en más, cambiamos de idioma. He got his nickname from his dad's favorite TV show, Rawhide, played by Clint Eastwood. Rowdy Yates, a young and energetic cowboy, went on to nickname Ambrose Gaines since his dad named him the way he did, or nicknamed him the way, or gave him his nickname. We all know him as Rowdy Gaines. Rowdy Gaines went on to become one of the best ever in the world of swimming. He went to become a force in his sport. He won 3 Olympic gold medals at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, including the 100 meter freestyle. And since 1992, Rowdy has been the lead analyst for NBC's Olympic swimming coverage, and he will do so again alongside good old friend Dan Hicks in the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Here, my conversation with one of the legends in the sport of swimming, an ambassador to the sport, telling us the story of how does it feel to be an ambassador? How does it feel to be called an Olympian? How he got his stolen Olympic medal back, and what we need to look forward to in the Olympic Games in Tokyo once swimming begins the second day of the Games. So here with you all for another episode of our podcast, Rowdy Gaines. So without further ado, I gotta admit, I won't say I was shaken this morning, but I was really excited, almost to the point of shaking, that I was able to talk today to one of the guys that I looked up to when I started thinking that the Olympics was the greatest thing on earth. And that hasn't stopped, by the way. Neither of the things has stopped. I haven't stopped thinking that Rowdy Gaines is one of the greatest inspirations, and I haven't stopped thinking that the Olympics is the greatest thing that ever existed. Rowdy, thank you so much for the time. How are you?
I'm doing great, Fernando. It's so cool to be with you. I was just telling you before we came on air that how much I love following you, and I've watched you over the years, so I'm a big fan, my friend.
I'm a big fan. So we'll put that
mutual admiration. Mutual fans. Party then.
Mutual fans. But my fandom towards you began way back when I was over at my aunt's house watching the Olympic Games on TV in '84. My aunt brought a TV out to her pool, because she said, "Why, you don't even get out of the house to watch these things." I was 9 at the time. No, I was 10 at the time. And I'm thinking, I got to be there. I got to be at the Olympics. I got to be an Olympian. Never made it to be an Olympian, but gosh, I'm so excited to get to talk to you. Rowdy, you're getting ready to go to the Olympics now as we record this, but let me go back and just over your career. I'm not going to go over your whole career, but you, in the end of it all, you've been called and are known as an ambassador of swimming. Not only do you hold a position as an ambassador with U.S. swimming, but you're also in the street. If people talk about Rowdy Gaines, they go, "Oh, he's the guy that talks swimming." You're an ambassador of the sport like no other. What does that mean to you? What does that entail? What does it come with it?
Well, obviously, Fernando, it comes with a great deal of responsibility. I don't take it lightly. I don't want to sound too corny, but I think the sport has done a lot more for me than I can ever imagine doing for it. It changed my life. I didn't start swimming until I was 17, and I was a junior in high school, and I kind of was going down, I wouldn't say a dark path, but a path that, you know, I certainly wasn't proud of. And having swimming coming into my life really changed the journey of my life for sure. And so, you know, when they talk about ambassador, it's certainly humbling in many ways, but for sure, I love the sport. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I love it with all my being. Again, this is kind of corny, but I feel more comfortable in the water than I do on land. So water is a big part of my life for sure.
So a couple of questions come up when I listen to you speak. Can it still be done? Get into swimming at 17 and become an Olympic champion?
Well, I knew how to swim, Fernando. I literally learned how to swim before I learned how to walk. I was 9 months old. We lived on a lake. I grew up in Winter Haven, Florida, which is right in the middle of the state. And my hometown is about 70% water. And so to survive, you had to know how to swim. My parents taught me how to swim at a very early age. But I didn't start competing, obviously, or start on a swim team until I got to high school. I don't know if that would still work today, but I was physically fit. I loved sports. I just wasn't very good in anything. And when I got to high school, I tried out for 5 other sports before I tried out for swimming, and I got cut in all of them. So I was really into sports. So I think having that athletic profile, however poor it was, certainly helped me in swimming. And being around water and water skiing, you know, I water skied a lot during the summers, and it was part of my life. So I think that helped a lot.
But did you know all 4 strokes before you got in?
No.
So yeah, swimming, you knew that. I mean, you wouldn't be left out. You could be left out on a pool by yourself at a very young age, and you'll be fine. What I'm saying is, at 17, you didn't know all 4 strokes, but yet you made it into world class swimmer. Different days, of course, but can it still be done somehow?
It's a good question, Fernando. I don't know at that late of an age it could be brought into fruition nowadays, because kids start, you know, so much earlier. They did when I was a swimmer too, but no, I didn't know. When I started, I swam with my head out of the water. I didn't know how to do a freestyle flip turn, certainly didn't know how to do any of the other strokes. I really feel like I was born with a gift. I think the Lord put me on this earth for a very specific purpose, just like all of us. And my gift just happened to be swimming. And I took it up pretty fast. 2.5 years after I started, I broke my first world record. So I knew that the rapid pace of everything was something that I didn't take for granted. That's for sure.
Now that I don't think can be done. You know, 2.5 years after you start swimming correctly, you become the best that ever was at the distance. How often do you stop? I don't know. I could never answer this question ever. I mean, I can only ask it to you and your like. How often do you stop and get awakened by the fact that you are an Olympic champion?
Well, again, I don't take that for granted for sure. And it's funny you asked me that question, Fernando, because I was in Hawaii recently. The U.S. Olympic team was down there training, and I was down there for a couple of days, and I met a lot of the kids for the first time. I didn't know a lot of the kids that had made this Olympic team. I mean, I've talked about a lot of them, but some of them just came out of nowhere. So I was talking to I think it was Hunter Armstrong, who made the 100 backstroke, Katie Grimes, who's 15 years old, and Natalie Hines, who also made the team. Anyway, I was talking to all of them. And as I talked to them, I said, you know, you're going to be an Olympian forever and ever. That's something that will never, ever be taken away from you. You will never be a past Olympian or a former Olympian. You'll be an Olympian forever and ever. So that's something that, you know, again, you asked that question, how do you put that in words? I'd never have been able to, buddy. I just try to say that, you know, I don't ever want to take that for granted. I'm very proud of the journey that I took to get there. but it's a small brother and sisterhood. I told all those kids there in Hawaii, I said, you know, you're my little sister. You're my little brother, because we'll always have that bond. I said, you'll be coming back to Hawaii in 40 years and telling those first time Olympians the same thing, that, you know, you're my little brother. You're my little sister. So it was, it's a neat feeling. Let me tell you.
It strikes me how a title that walks with you forever is sometimes more important than the material.
Absolutely.
Gift that was given to you because of that title. Some medalist, Olympic medalist, carry the title of Olympic medalist with way more pride than what they hold when they tell you where they keep the Olympic medal. Some don't even know where their Olympic medal is, right, but they certainly know they are Olympic medalist. That is the greatest title in sports. And you are.
Well, I don't know if it's the greatest title in sports, but I agree with you, Fernando. For me, it was always the title of being an Olympian, more so than an Olympic gold medalist. Believe me, I was proud of the gold medal, and that was certainly the goal as I began to get more and more into this journey. But really, in the end, it was really just about becoming an Olympian. I think I look back on that with a lot more sense of pride and memory. You know, you remember how you remember things of your successes and stuff. You know, my memories of really becoming an Olympian more so than winning the gold medal. You know, that's,
I could keep my Olympic, my athletic successes on a floppy disk. Remember those?
Of course.
I held maybe a war document and that was it. So that could be me.
Oh, that's funny. Well, but yours, me too, except for swimming.
I would think, Rowdy, that at some point as well, you might say to yourself, gosh, I wish we'd had some phones at the time that would hold all the or the pictures that I wanted to take, right?
Yeah,
How big is your 1984 Olympic picture album?
You know, my,
like the ones you took, not the ones that were given to you, but
yeah,
the ones you took.
You know, I took a lot. You know, the little Instamatic, you know, or Polaroid or something. A lot of them are lost, Fernando, unfortunately. You know, we've lost a lot of them. I gave a lot to my mom. My mom was really collecting all of that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in 2004 in Florida, we had three hurricanes go right over Winter Haven, my mom's home. And the third one destroyed her home and took with it all the memorabilia. Took the roof off her home and everything flooded. And so a lot of that memorabilia was lost. But you know what? I mean, yes, and that was tragic and no doubt about it. My mom was safe and that's all that mattered, really. It's really not the, you know, it's like the Olympic medal, buddy. You know, it's not so much the medal, the M-E-D-A-L. It's really the journey to the medal. You know, it's not the material part of the medal that really means that too much to me. I take my medal around everywhere I go. I share it. It's been dropped. It's been dinged. It's got marks all over it. It was stolen. I mean, there are a lot of things that have gone through that medal to me that really it's not the metal part so much as it is the journey.
Did you get it back?
I did get it back. I did.
How's that story?
It's a long story, but in 30 seconds, you know,
we're not short on time here. Don't worry about it. There's no producer counting in my ear. It's your time that counts. You're making it as long as you want to make it.
Oh, thank you, buddy. No, it you know, totally my fault. I went to a YMCA to go swim, and I put it in a little, you know, those little coin things that you turn and you put the key in, and I forgot to do that, and I forgot to lock it, and I came back out and it was gone, and then I got a phone call the next day, and the guy on the phone said, I have your medal, and if you want it back, it's going to cost you $10,000. And so my wife was standing right next to me, and she about fell on the floor when the next thing I said was, it's fake, you can keep it. And I hung up on him. And so, you know, it was a risk for sure. And my wife about had a fit, but he called back, you know, 30 seconds later, and he goes, okay, well, you still probably need this fake one. I'll take $100 for it. I go, all right, I'll give you $100 for it. 'Cause that's how much it cost me to reproduce it. So again, long story short, I met him at, and I didn't want to meet him anywhere private. I met him at a restaurant. He handed me my medal. I handed him $100. I said, you know, you won't be forgiven for this. You're $100 richer, but you'll be held accountable at some point for this.
Wow. I didn't know that story. And I know a story of a guy who we have on the podcast before, Daniela Seves.
I don't know if I've ever told that story. I don't think I've ever told that story.
You want me to edit
it? It's a little embarrassing. No. I don't care. I could care less. So it's Daniela a bit embarrassing, Seves. But you know, it is funny. It's an interesting story. It's funny now because I got the medal back. But it's funny because I hung up on the guy, you know, took a chance.
Did you think about what you were going to say? Did you have a strategy?
No, I had no idea. No, I thought it was gone for good. No, the phone call came out of the blue. How he got my number, I don't know. Obviously, I guess when you look at the medal, it on the medal itself, it's general. But on the side of the medal is the event that I won. So it was men's 100 meter freestyle. And it has 1984 Olympics. So it probably wasn't too hard to look up that I wanted, and somehow or another, he got my number. And no, I had no strategy because I hadn't, it was totally knee jerk off the cuff. Like, I am not paying $10,000 for this medal. So I'm hanging up on this guy. And that's when it came to me. Oh, it's fake. You can keep it. Hang on up.
That's a good one. I don't know, somebody would want a ransom, pick up that strategy. Don't worry about it. He's adopted. Don't worry about it. Keep him.
Yeah, right. You're right. Yeah, keep him.
he's not even my kid.
Keep him. Or sometimes if it's a teenager, you go, oh, you can keep him anyway.
Yeah. Then he'll be asking me for money to give
right,
him
away. Right, exactly.
Now, right. You've mentioned, Rowdy, the journey many times, and I do agree with that. It's we have to take sometimes a time to reflect on the fact that what we walk on daily is what really matters, not what we or where we set our goal to be. Of course, our goal is a way, it's like a guiding light, but there's so many twists and turns to that journey that sometimes we just keep our focus on the guiding light and never stop to reflect where we have actually walked and where we stand at that point. And in talking right. about this, you had a chance to actually come out with a ton of gold out of Russia in 1980, and the boycott stopped it.
Right.
This helped to also reflect on what athletes go through when they think that their biggest dream might be canceled. Yours was right. in 1980.
True.
How do you think athletes, and what do you think athletes went through in this moment of uncertainty when they said, you know, Tokyo 2020 might be canceled and just erased in the schedule?
Yeah, you're right, Fernando. I think I've probably been on 150 Zoom calls podcast Zoom calls, conference calls with teams, athletes, pro teams, college teams, club teams, because a lot of the coaches know my story of being part of the 80 boycott team. And so in many ways, I can certainly empathize with what they went through. I will tell you that it is a bit apples and oranges, because what I suffered through was basically the death of an athletic career, potentially. And many did have that. In fact, there were 323 athletes that made the 1980 team that didn't make it in 76 and did not make it in 84. So that was their only team. But really it's a much more of a matter of life and death now that we've lived through the last year and a half. So it is a little different, but the empathy is still there. The feeling of, I know what you went through, or the feeling of that we all went through, denial, we were all in denial at first, I think. And then it's anger, you get really angry. And then all of a sudden an extreme sadness comes over you, depression. And I think we all went through that. And then all of a sudden, this is where the very best turn the corner. You turn that into acceptance. And then in the end, you turn it into motivation. And that's what I did in 1980. And the very best here in 2020 and 2021 have done the same thing. They've accepted it, they've moved on, and then they're motivated by it.
Is swimming going to miss somebody because they didn't turn the corner?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nathan Adrian, you know, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, American sprinters in history. And, you know, I think a year ago he would have made the team, but another year under his belt, you know, a lot of things changed his life for the better. You know, he got married, had a child. I mean, that's pretty special. Mm-hmm. But you know, Father Time catches up with you, just like it caught up with Ryan Lochte. And then some others, it helped, you know, some of those young kids, like, you know, there's a girl named Tori Husk who made the Olympic team a year ago. There's no way she would have made it. This little girl, Katie Grimes, who's 15, made it in the 800. And a year ago, she would have never made it. So it helped some, and it certainly hurt others.
Tim Lampley, when Colin Reyes had replayed it not too long before we went on air or started recording the podcast, Tim Lampley, when Europe last 15 meters or 10 meters and before you touch the wall, he goes, the sentimental favorite. People really did want you to win that gold medal in 1984. You were the sentimental favorite. The crowd thought of this veteran at 25.
Right.
You know, with another chance of winning the gold medal. Did you think that you were the favorite, the crowd's favorite? Did you really embrace that?
I certainly felt the energy, Fernando. I definitely felt the energy. I felt the love of the crowd. You know, most people I ever swam in front of was probably 20, and there were 20,000 in LA. So the energy was certainly felt. It was in our home country, which was awesome. But in 1984, time had certainly passed me by. I mean, it was different then. At 25, I was the third oldest swimmer in history to win a gold medal. And now 25 is, you know, that's pretty much the average age of an Olympic team. So it was completely different back then because there was no money involved in the sport. I had graduated from college 3 years earlier. So I was hanging on by the skin of my teeth. And in fact, if you would have swum that race 10 times, I would have finished fifth or sixth, nine of them. I just had that one magical moment. And I, you know, I can't explain it. Everything just went right. I had a perfect start. I had a perfect turn. I had a great breakout. I mean, the technical stuff worked out perfectly. You know, I think the Lord kind of felt sorry for me, like, oh, dude, you've been through a lot here the last 8 years. I'm going to go ahead and let you win one here. And there were a lot more talented swimmers than I was in 1984. In 1980, I was the best. I will say I was the best in 80, but in 84, I was not. So it was one of those magical moments for sure.
What would the Rowdy Gaines commentators say to the Rowdy Gaines race in 1984? How would you call it?
Oh my gosh, that would be funny, right?
They put you to analyze your own race.
Oh my gosh. You know what, Fernando? I've never thought of that. That would be so cool, right? Maybe I should do that, get together with Dan and call my race and have fun with it. No,
but
I'd be going
perfect
crazy.
Still, I mean, of course, your perception of perfection now with swimming and all the advancements and techniques and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's definitely something that you see now that you would have said, oh, come on, Rowdy, you had to have corrected that before going into the pool. Or if you see it now, do you still think of it as a perfect race?
Yes. And I'll tell you why, Fernando. And again, this is a bit on the lengthy side, but I'll definitely shorten up. So our sport went to a no fault start rule in 1982. Before then, you were allowed to false start not only once, but twice, right? In international competition. Mm-hmm. So when we went to the no fault start rule that we had in 1984, it was hard because I kept false starting. Well, I changed that. I changed my start to the track start. I was the first swimmer to use the track start. And, so at the Olympics, there are normally two to three starters, and they all have a different cadence on when they say, take your mark, bang, right? Well, this one, I swam the third day. The starter that started the first day basically did that. Take your mark, bang. I mean, it barely let the kids get down. So my coach saw that and he said, we have to change your start, because if this guy starts your race, you're going to be left on the block. 8 years I'd been preparing for this start of going down really slow and timing my start. But I trusted my coach. And so we worked on it the day before my race. We changed it. I went down fast. And, you know, long story short, the guy started my race and he did exactly that. Take your mark, bang. And if you look at the replay, the 16 Days of Glory replay that Bud Greenspan did, it shows me coming down really fast and everybody else coming down slow and getting left on the blocks. So that's the beginning of the step to have that, having that perfect race, is the fact that I had the perfect start.
So you're going into your eighth Olympic Games as an mm-hmm. analyst, started mm-hmm. in 1992. How do you pack? And this is more, how do you pack? What do you pack in your bag? I'm not asking you to analyze or tell me the stories. That'll come in time, but I just thought about it. You're going to your eighth Olympics as an analyst to sit, you know, inside the stadium for a whole week of swimming, and then for a week before you're going to get to Tokyo this time with the time change and all that. I'm doing the same thing here in a couple of days. Help me out. What do you pack?
So here, it's so funny you ask that, because I'm such a cheapskate, you know? So, you know, we normally get a per diem, right? Yeah. So we get a certain amount every day, and that takes care of everything, food, laundry, phone, whatever. So what I do is I pack, like, and I don't want to do laundry because I don't want to take a chance of it not coming back, right? I have no idea what laundry is going to be like. So I pack 21 pairs of socks, 21 pairs, and, you know, for the 3 weeks, 21 pairs of underwear. I pack like 7 pairs of pants, knowing, well, you know, I'll just wear one, and then in 7 days I'll wear them again, you know? And then I pack, like, I don't know, a dozen shirts, knowing I'm going to get some stuff when I get there. And if I have to do laundry, I know I can have that in my back pocket, but I pack to stay for 3 weeks, right? Or 23 days. But I never pack like that ever, except when I'm gone like this, the Olympics. Normally when I travel, I don't even check a bag. I just carry on. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I don't want to take any chances. So I kind of overpack. I overpack like a lot of people do, that I know, that I won't mention. But I only pack like 2 pairs of shoes, knowing I'm going to be switching back and forth. I think they told us to bring a suit, right? So we have to bring a suit. So I'll bring a suit, and yeah, that's it, buddy. A lot of toiletries. I like my own soap. So pack your own soap. So I like, you know, my Coast soap. And so I pack a couple bars of Coast soap with me, because I don't know what the hotel soap's going to be like.
See, that's my thing. I don't know what if the hotel will have, you know, with all these restrictions nowadays.
Right.
I don't know if they'll have a coffee machine. So I'm here.
Oh, right.
Here I am talking to my wife. How do we? I know we can't use the gym, for example. We can't go
right. I just heard that yesterday. I heard the gym and the pool are out of bounds.
So you take exercise away from me for it. I mean, I won't complain that much, but
I know
about that part. But then you take exercise away from me, and then you take a coffee machine out. That might be.
Oh boy.
So.
They've got to have that. I can't imagine they'll have that in the room, Fernando. They've got to have that.
We'll right. talk about that when we get there, and we'll see how your room is doing.
Where are you staying? Are you staying at the Hilton?
I'm staying in the Shinagawa Prince Hotel.
Oh, Shinagawa Prince, yeah.
So everybody that's listening to the podcast, they can just ask for my name and call my
room. Yeah, right. They want to. Oh, no, I shouldn't have asked.
No, that's okay. That's a press hotel, basically. So we'll see once we get there. We'll see how that goes. But I'm a big packer too. I'm a big packer. I don't know how to do laundry.
Oh, you know, another thing you pack is I pack a sweatshirt or two at least, because you know in those meetings, you sometimes it'll be hotter in Hades in Tokyo. Yeah. And by the way, I pack, you know, 6 or 7 pairs of shorts too, but I always pack a few sweatshirts because I know it's going to be cold in those production meetings we have.
And the pool gets cold as well.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
From my little pool experience in the Olympics. Now,
yeah.
You have called or have been involved in 200 and I did the math. I don't know if I'm right or wrong. 230 finals. And I corrected that one because there was an Olympic gold medal that was shared in 2016. 2016. 230 finals. Now you say you have good memory. Would you be able to off the cuff just recall pretty much every race?
I
don't have it here handy.
Pretty much like who won the gold in the 96 Olympics in the 100 freestyle for men.
I got the 100 breaststroke for men in 2016.
That was Adam Peaty.
Okay, so he won the world championships then also.
Yeah, he won worlds in 17 and 19 too. Mm-hmm. Has the top 16 times in history. He's untouchable. That's a pretty easy one.
I could have gone something harder. Yeah.
Yeah, you can go harder. If I don't know, I don't know. Part of me, Fernando, and I'll tell you this is, have you ever remember in school you'd go in and you'd take a test and you'd study SAR and you go, oh man, I know this because I studied, right? Mm-hmm. And then you walk out of the test and an hour later you couldn't even begin to tell you the answers to that test, right? Part of it's a little bit like that for me, you know, and like you study so hard. I know more about these kids than they know about themselves. I know everything about them, but I study so hard. So when I leave that venue, I tend to forget, or I leave that Olympics, I tend to forget. But go ahead, try testing me and let me see. I wish I had Mike Unger with me here from USA Swimming. He knows all these answers, but
give me one more.
Those
make me feel bad. Those guys that 1984, you know, 400 meter hurdlers, gold medal, women's gold medal. I know that one, but I mean,
I don't know that one.
They go and tell you the whole
podium. Edwin Moses won the 400 men, right?
Yeah, and Nawal Mutwakil won the women's.
Oh my gosh, I would have never known that.
IOC,
that was my Olympics.
The IOC member from Morocco now. 200 wow. individual medley, women's 200 IM in 1996.
Michelle Smith from Ireland.
Yeah, but yeah. That same year, 200 meter freestyle for women.
200 meter freestyle women, 1996. Let me see. Amy Van Dyken won the 100 free, 200 free. Mary Waite won in 84. Who won the 200 free? Don't help me. Don't help me. Let me think. Give me 10 more seconds.
Mm-hmm. Amy Van Dyken won the 50.
50. When she won the 50, that's right. And the 100 fly.
And the 100 fly won by Li Yingyi from China.
Oh, that's... Well, then... So Amy just won the 50? Didn't she win the 100 free? Who won the 100 free? I don't know who won the 100
free. Li Yingyi.
Oh yeah, see from China. See, I wouldn't be able to tell you Chinese. Mm-hmm. But women's was it Claudia Pohl from Costa Rica?
Yes, sir. Ah,
okay.
See, you got that.
You helped me with the Chinese though. Once I remember the Chinese, I thought. See, I would never remember. I have a hard time remembering Chinese swimmers because, first of all, it's hard for me from a name recognition because we're just not familiar with that, right? Mm-hmm. But also because they come and go so quickly. A lot of these, you know, you talk Nathan Adrian, 4-time Olympian. You talk about Michael Phelps and all these great Olympians that a lot of countries have. They're multiple Olympics. Most of the Chinese swimmers do not compete in more than one, at the most, 2 Olympic Games. So you don't get to know them very well.
And that happens a lot in track and field as well. The sport I cover outside of soccer, that's the second sport I cover the most. And their turnaround is so quick. So fast.
Yeah, right.
And every Olympic cycle, you get one or two.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
One or two repeating, and that's it.
That's right. That's the same as swimming.
Just recently, Peacock in the United States has shown a great series recalling the details of Michael Phelps' Olympic medals and every single race of Michael Phelps' career. in having gone back and retraced what he did beginning in 2000 and every Olympic year or every Olympic after, does it help you appreciate more what he did, having it recalled with him by your side?
Does it help? Say that again now. Does it help me?
Does it help you appreciate more what Michael Phelps did, having him recall those races by your side?
Absolutely.
You saw the races. You appreciated it from the swimming expert standpoint. But now you have him next to you, and he would react. Facial expressions were, you know, just exuberant in facial expressions. And he talked with his face and his voice.
Yeah.
Cadence changes every time he gets emotional. And I'm sure that you saw in him things that you didn't see in him while he was in the pool.
Yeah, you're so right. It was really eye-opening. And I think Michael and I have become much closer friends. And Michael's always been somebody that, you know, I've called every one of his races. But before 2016, we didn't really have a close relationship. We didn't have an adversarial relationship. We just didn't have a friend relationship. I just knew him at the pool, and that's about it. But we have been really become very close friends over the last 5 years. And I'm actually working with him right now on a business venture that I'm getting ready to partake in. And I you know, we text back and forth a lot. We talk to each other a lot. And having that friendship develop over the last 4 or 5 years has really helped me, I guess, appreciate the journey that he took. He's the greatest Olympian in history, in my opinion. I mean, a lot of people will definitely say, you know, Jesse Owens, who would be right up there, obviously. Eric Heiden is another one that I think of. Carl Lewis. I mean, there are a lot of Simone Biles. I mean, there's a lot of goats out there. But for my money, Michael is the greatest Olympian in history. And for my money, I think he's the greatest athlete in history. But that's room for a bar when we have a drink to argue over that. You might say a Pelé or something like that, and I can't argue it, right? But he really has opened up over the last 5 years. And that documentary was wonderful for him to sit down with Dan and I, really go through each race and kind of explain what he was going through emotionally, physically, and mentally, and spiritually. And it was really fascinating for me.
One of the things, and this is maybe to add to the argument of those listening about what I think of Michael Phelps, and without putting him in a particular place in the history of sports, I think his stardom has increased exponentially just by the fact that he has become such a vocal advocate for mental health. An issue that, I don't know, it's not systematic because it's not by design, but it has come up in my last episodes. And over the past few months, we have, without planning, going into that topic in particular. And Michael has put his face out, or he has told his story for others to relate, that success doesn't come without, you know, it's hard hits. And to that, and because of that, I think Michael has raised his stature. And he's not only the guy that won medals at the Olympics, he's much more than that, and he's using that to shed light on such a hard topic.
Yeah, you're so right, buddy. I mean, you know, he's gone through some peaks and valleys in his life, and as we all have. And I think right now, for him to shine a light on mental health, it certainly helped me, because when I watched that documentary, it was on HBO that you're talking about. It certainly resonated with me, because I went through the same thing after 84, you know. We just didn't know what it was almost 40 years ago, right? And, but I went through, a really big down period in my life. It didn't last long, thankfully, but for about 9 to 12 months, I was, you know, at the depths of despair, you know, because you feel like all you know how to do is swim. You don't feel like you know how to do anything else. And, you know, you put these blinders on for me, it was 8 years, and you don't really think about anything else. And so for him to shine a light on it has certainly helped, and to put him, you know, and expose himself like that, I think has helped, helped others for sure.
Rowdy, we're going to close it out. And I want to take advantage of the fact that you are going to be the most prepared swimming expert out there in Tokyo. I'll be watching, right? But you'll be there knowing exactly, knowing right now, probably what is going to happen. So tell me the top three things that we should look out for in swimming for the Tokyo Olympics. The top three, not, okay, you know, must see TV type of event.
Good question. Okay. I'll start with Katie Ledecky, greatest female swimmer in history. And the 400 freestyle, the very first day, or is it the second day? I think it's the second day. And she'll go up against this woman from Australia, Ariana Titmus is her name. And Titmus almost broke Katie's world record at her Olympic trials from Australia. And Katie went like 4 seconds slower at the U.S. trials. So that's going to be the race that really sets the tone for that entire Olympics for Katie Ledecky and her journey to becoming perhaps the most prolific American Olympian in history, American female Olympian. Mm-hmm. Caleb Dressel has a chance to win 7 Olympic medals. He's the best male swimmer in the world today. Can he, you know, withstand the immense pressure that he'll be under? You know, he's the favorite in the 50 free, the 100 free, the 100 fly, 3 relays, maybe 4. So, you know, each one of his races will be must-see TV, each and every one of them.
He's swimming every single day of the program as well, too, right?
He's swimming pretty much every
day of the schedule.
Yeah, that's right. He didn't swim individually until like the third day, but yeah, he'll have relays. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got a busy schedule, Michael Phelpsian like schedule, you know, for sure. And then I think the last one, oh, there's so many. I just love Lily King. I'm trying to think of a newcomer, you know, a Tori Husk who could win gold in the 100 fly, or, you know, a youngster like that. But I come back around to Lily King and her brash style of doing things. And she backs it up every time. She's always must see TV to me.
One of the few defending Olympic champions that will be coming back to
that's
Tokyo,
right.
Lily King.
That's
we
right.
all remember her, hard stance on the fight against doping.
Yeah. Yep.
Some might not have liked it and not have seen this, her sportsmanship as fair or just, but she stood up and
she did
responded.
I love her. I love her. I love watching her.
This has been one of the best episodes of my series. We're going on to the 4th or maybe 5th year of the series. And I truly love the fact that you were so kind to open up a couple of minutes in your heavy schedule leading up to the games. I didn't want to stop too much or take too much time away from your packing. But I know you're pretty much bringing the whole closet. So that's an easy thing to do. You know, when you're bringing so
true.
Much...
This is true. And you're all so worried about forgetting stuff. And you and I both know all the COVID tests that we have to take and all these documents. And it's going to be in a different Olympics for sure, but it'll be an exciting one. I still think, Fernando, this will be the greatest Olympics of our lifetime when it's all said and done. Because our world needs it.
Yeah, they are singular. They're being done in a particular time. But I've always said since this whole thing started in the cancellation topic was on the table, I always said that I truly wish the games went on regardless of how they did, and they will go on in strange circumstances without fans, but we have to remember this is for the athletes, and the athletes deserve to have that once in a lifetime shot at doing things. Nobody should ever take away the fact that these guys have, and their families and their the people that surround them have all dedicated a lifetime to this.
Right.
And it's right. for them. And we should be able to cover the games for them as much as we would like to tell the story of how hard it's going to be on us and the many tests that we're going to take, the hardships of not having a coffee machine in our room. Well, this is for the athletes, right? Rowdy, thank you so very, very much. I'm hoping to catch a drink with you over there if we can.
Maybe if we can, you know we will, buddy.
Another friend of the sidewalk.
I told you at the very beginning, I'm a huge fan. I've always admired you and your career. You've been a big inspiration to me. So hopefully we'll cross paths in Tokyo.
Yeah, we definitely have to cross paths because I really want to know how can I inspire you. I can't even inspire my kids to get out of bed.
I've got one in bed right now, so don't worry about it.
Rowdy Gaines, Olympic champion. And that sounds great every time I get to say it to somebody that has actually made it to fulfill his dream, his or her dream. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Rowdy.
Thank you, Fernando. Take care.
Thanks again for listening. Thanks again for joining in. And you can enjoy more English language podcast in this series by going onto our main page and looking up the archive. There's a couple of interesting conversations over there leading up to the Olympic Games. Thanks again, and we'll see you, or I guess we'll listen to each other next time. Muchas gracias por habernos acompañado en este nuevo episodio de Nos Ponemos Las Pilas. En el archivo pueden encontrar otras conversaciones que tienen que ver con los Juegos Olímpicos. Espero que las disfruten y nos escuchamos pronto. Hasta la próxima.